Word of
mouth.
Word of mouth.
Word of mouth.
Word of mouth.
Word of mouth.
Word of mouth.
Word of mouth.
Mouth.
This is Word of Mouth from NHPR. I'm Virginia Prescott. When Russian President Vladimir Putin turned 58, 12 female admirers published a calendar of themselves in clothing and poses that could have been found in a Victoria's Secret catalog. How about a third time, read Miss February's caption, a provocative reference to Putin's third presidential run. The well-publicized gift reinforced Putin's magnetic machismo, carefully cultivated through images of the Russian leader subduing wild animals, playing rough sports, fighting fires, and many, many photos of his muscular torso on display. Political scientist Valerie Sperling makes the case that trading on widely familiar ideas about gender and sexuality has been a strategy for Putin to establish political legitimacy. This sexualization of the political realm runs parallel to increasing authoritarianism and nationalism in Russia, which includes oppression of feminists, the LGBT community, and other anti-Kremlin opposition. Valerie Sperling is professor of political science at Clark University and author of the new book, Sex, Politics, and Putin, Political Legitimacy in Russia. And Valerie Sperling, welcome to Word of Mouth.
Thank you so much for having me.
Now, you point to Putin's displays of masculinity with journalists in tow as part of a strategy of legitimation. Now, why do these images in particular work in today's Russia?
You know, I think this works in today's Russia. I think it resonates with the public because of the political context. You know, you have to remember that Putin comes to power right after the 1990s, and that's when you have the collapse of the Soviet Union, the loss of Russia's superpower status, the loss of communist ideology to the extent that anybody still believed in it. You have the economic collapse after the transition, you know, from communism to capitalism. And Yeltsin, during the 90s, Russia's leader, is seen as having presided over weakening Russia at the hands of the West. So in that context, right, Putin's assertion of masculinity, here we have a strong leader who's going to make Russia strong. He's going to actually re-masculinize Russia. That image, I think, really resonates. Mm-hmm.
You can't kick Russia around anymore, kind of
exactly.
Thing.
Exactly.
There are many things at work here, including the significance of showing his dominance over other men. Now, Valerie, mm-hmm. Is this clear that this is all strategic, or is this just who Putin is, a macho guy?
Yeah. I think most politics is about competition, and so it's going to entail dominating others. And so in that sense, these are strategic choices. It's a choice to put other potential competitors in their place. And sometimes that takes a concrete form. I can give you one example. It's kind of a graphic example. This was a few years ago. A liberal politician, Boris Nemtsov, who was jailed after participating in a protest against the regime in an opposition rally. And then while he was in jail, a pro-Putin youth group, you know, which is at least in some ways sponsored by the Kremlin, right? It went out in Moscow with a petition asking people to have the prosecutor's office investigate charges that Nemtsov had been raped while he was in jail, right? So now there was no evidence that Nemtsov had been raped in jail or that he had been sexually abused in any way. But what that did was it suggested, right, that maybe Nemtsov hadn't been strong enough to fend off an attack, you know, not manly enough to resist, or maybe even that he had been a willing participant in gay sex, right? So that is how that dominance can play out in this way of impugning, you know, another man's manly reputation. Mm-hmm.
Well, Nashi, one of these pro-Putin groups, is also behind a video that went hyper-viral in Russia in 2011. We'll play a clip from it. It's a 2011 video, 2.5 million hits. And the announcement here is that I'll rip it for Putin. It's announcing a contest.
Достойный политик и шикарный мужчина. Он Владимир Путин. Его обожают миллионы, ему верят. Но есть кучка людей, которые поливают его грязью.
So, Valerie, what's going on in this video?
So in this video, you see this very nicely dressed young woman in stiletto heels, very buxom as well, strolling around in chic areas of Moscow with her iPhone. And what she's doing in the clip, the voiceover that you hear, she's talking about what a wonderful politician and man Putin is. So she goes on like this. She meets up with some of her young, beautiful friends, and they announce a competition called I'll Rip for Putin. And at the end of the clip, what she does, she has a tank top, a white tank top that she's wearing, and she tears it in half. And the clip ends just as she tears it, so you don't actually get to see anything. And at that last moment, the voiceover says, it's her voice speaking, she says, what are you prepared to do for your president?
But opposition groups have been vocal, but I'd like to know how vocal. Is there a politically legitimate feminist voice or party in Russian politics today, and how do they regard Putin?
Yeah, that's a good question. There is definitely a feminist voice in Russia today, but it's a small voice in public. I think that the young feminists that I interviewed, they see Putin and the whole masculinity macho strategy for exactly what it is. Like, he's being portrayed as the alpha male whose leadership can't be questioned. You know, so in other words, they see that machismo and authoritarianism are reinforcing each other. And also, to the extent that the political leader in that paradigm has to be defined as a manly man, that doesn't leave a lot of room in politics for women. And feminists recognize that as well.
Well, there was one opposition group that we heard a lot about, reached international attention. This is the punk rock performance artist group, Pussy Riot. Members were arrested a few minutes into performing this punk prayer. Now, this was at the Cathedral of Christ the Savior in Moscow, later sentenced to prison, and later did a bit of a PR run around the United States. Here's just a little clip of the chaos from this original video. They're in dresses and masks, and they're chanting and dancing and genuflecting on the altar. In the book, you analyze some of Pussy Riot's songs. Mm-hmm. And, you know, some of the lyrics are trading on those same kind of macho images, like they're calling Putin a pansy, or, you know, saying that he wets himself, you know, that kind of thing. So reinforcing all of these gender norms. And they're not the only opposition groups to suggest that Putin, you know, maybe not manly enough. There are anti-Kremlin activists in Russia have marched under a banner that Putin is a faggot. And I'm sorry to use that word, but so when did this sexuality become a rallying cry in Russian politics?
Yeah, that's a good question. I mean, I think it happens actually in the 1990s, and it's not before that, because in the communist era, there's none of that. You know, politicians didn't have to be advertised to the public, but in the 90s, after the Soviet Union collapses and Russia becomes an independent state, that's when you start to see some sexuality getting mixed up in politics. But at that time, it's absolutely on the margins. And specifically, it's embodied in this one Russian politician, this very kind of clownish, over-the-top politician named Vladimir Zhirinovsky. Now, he had a party which continues to exist called the Liberal Democratic Party of Russia. But anyway, he ran, Zhirinovsky ran for president in 1996 against Yeltsin. And that's where he started bringing in the sexuality. He said, the LDPR is a virgin party. And on election day, 40 million men are going to race after the virgin LDPR. And all the other parties are political prostitutes. So at that time, you know, I think he was widely recognized as being a marginal character. But anyway, after Putin came to power, though, sexuality, masculinity, desirability, those things became harnessed to the political prospects of Putin, who was a comparatively staid, you know, mainstream politician. I think that's when it really starts to get big.
Google Vladimir Putin and you're bound to come up with loads of images of the shirtless Russian leader. Well, we're talking with the political scientist Valerie Sperling, who's done a lot of research on gender norms and the political realm in Russia. Her new book is called Sex, Politics, and Putin. So at the same time that Putin's been kind of pushing this masculinity and its association with being a strong, decisive leader. Russia was becoming a less democratic state, which leads us to one of the major lines of inquiry in your study, that role that sexuality in the political realm plays in democracy. I know it's tough to summarize, but how do you see that fitting in?
Well, I guess we could look at this question in one of two ways. One is, what does using so many gender norms and sexualization do to democracy? In other words, how does it undermine democracy? And the other way to look at it is that this is something that's not unique to Russia, that it enters into other dictatorships, and it also enters into democracies. A difference is that in democracies, right, in places that have a longstanding women's movement, it's not as easy for politicians to succeed on that basis. The United States, even, when Todd Akin in 2012 was running for the Senate, right, the Republican, and he made that awful comment that legitimate rape, you know, would not result in pregnancy, mm-hmm. he lost his race mm-hmm. because I think the public was well aware that that was not a legitimate thing to say. And by contrast, in 2006, when Putin was speaking to Israel's prime minister, a statement was made which caught the attention of Russian feminists, but they were not really able to bring it to the public's attention. What happened was, at that time, Israel's president had been accused of raping two of the women on his staff. And Putin, he said, "Oh, President Kotsov turned out to be a mighty man. He raped 10 women. You know, we all envy him." And apparently, like both delegations, you know, laughed at this rape joke. And so this was reported, feminists knew about it, but it didn't get any traction as a shameful story in Russia, the way that I suspect something like that would get traction if there was a bigger, stronger feminist movement.
Mm-hmm. Well, now Russia is largely diplomatically isolated. Inflation, low gas prices are really sending the economy into the tank. Will we see more of these displays of machismo, you know, the shirtless, decisive Putin that you can rally behind? Does it work anymore?
I think it does continue to work. The worse Russia's position gets, in a way, the stronger Putin's position gets personally. The more endangered Russia is, whether it's being threatened, you know, from the West, you know, with sanctions, trying to undermine Russia, I think the more the Russian regime can point to that, the more they can point to the necessity of Putin as the leader. You know, speaking about sexual metaphors and, you know, and so forth, a couple of weeks ago, Boris Nemtsov, a liberal politician, he was being asked, I think, how is Putin managing to be so popular, even despite, you know, the ruble crashing and the economy being in some dire straits? You know, Putin's still pulling something over 80% approval ratings. And Nemtsov said, using a very sexual metaphor, he said, by taking over the Crimea, Putin found the Russian population's G-spot, and they are prepared to forgive him everything.
Well, I think we have to end there. Valerie Sperling, professor of political science at Clark University and author of the new book, Sex, Politics, and Putin, Political Legitimacy in Russia. Thank you very much for speaking with us.
It was a real pleasure, Virginia.
Now, you'll find more on the book, and you can see some of the many shirtless Putin tumblers. We've got links at wordofmouthradio.org.
Ladies and gentlemen, this song is about a man I really like. He's so cute, he's so strong, and so powerful. This song is about
Vladimir
Putin. Vladimir
Putin.
Forget the days of Magnum P.I. and Hasselhoff. When it comes to the masculine ideal on television today, Mad Men's dapper and enigmatic Don Draper takes the cake. Up next, why a fictional whiskey-drinking philanderer from the 1960s has become a new masculine icon. That's when Word of Mouth returns after a short break.